Hello and welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for attending our panel. My name is Jasmine Brown. I'm Director of DEI, Culture and Engagement at the Ad Council. For any of you that don't or aren't familiar with the Ad Council and the work that we do, we are a nonprofit organization that partners with advertisers and brands to create campaigns in which we hope to drive social change. So I'm super excited to be here. I'm mostly really excited to be on the stage next to these three, in which, you know, I'll introduce shortly. But I did want to take a brief pause before we got into the conversation and really just acknowledge a conversation that the four of us had been having in the couple weeks leading up to South by Southwest. We thought it was really important for us to consider, you know, not only everything that's going on in the world, but very specifically the things that are happening right here in Texas. It's really almost impossible to organize a DEI panel, especially with individuals as mindful and insightful as these three, and not talk about what's going on in the world, and we really needed to acknowledge that. So, you know, Texas and what's going on in particular here, there's many anti-trans and LGBTQ plus bills that are being introduced and even passed. A lot of these bills, unfortunately, are impacting trans youth and their parents who are, you know, trying to support and seeking support for their children and their identity journey. I wanted to acknowledge that in this panel and before we really got started. So with that, you know, before we got into intros, I just wanted to make sure we acknowledge it. But yeah, so I'll take a moment. I'll let the panelists introduce themselves and tell you a little bit about their journey, and then we'll hop into the conversation. So we'll start with Ash.
Hi, everybody.
Mike.
Am I good? Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Ash Ramirez. My pronouns are they, LA, and Poppy, Hugh, and Spicy. Additionally, I identify as a trans, non-binary Latina, actually from Houston, Texas, so hey, ooh, happy to be here. And I'm the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Lead at The Many, which is an independent advertising agency based in LA. I've been there for about 6 months, and prior to that, I've been in diversity work for about 5 years.
I love these homies. I just want to say, take a beat to say, it just feels really good to be sitting with you all up here. And I'm really grateful to be up here with you all at South by Southwest. So I just want to say that out loud before we left. But my name is Nate Nichols. I am the founder of Palette Group and the creative director of Palette Group. And what most people, I think, know me for is co-founding an organization called Allyship in Action with my life partner and this homie and another homie named Amy. And yeah, that is my life, you know, as a creative, being shoved into DEI and just striving to just share my lived experience. I didn't want to be in DEI, so to speak. I just wanted to be a creative director. And so before you sits a black man who is a creative director.
Cool. I hope, there we go. I think I'm picking up pretty well. Hope y'all can hear me. Hello, South by Southwest, hi. My name is Bennett Bennett. That is not a typo or anything close to that. I wear probably too many hats, but by day I am a storytelling consultant, a hybrid creative director and content strategist. By night, weekends, holidays, the next crazy cultural crisis, I am the co-founder, partnerships lead in spirit of an organization called 600 and Rising that was formed right after the George Floyd chaos across our country and the world, and founding partner and strategy lead alongside Nate, Steffi, and Amy of Allyship in Action, which is an anti-bias platform for corporate America. I'm sure we can get into a little bit more as the conversation goes on, but excited to be around just these remarkable people, and obviously everybody here who's doing that work for us as Black individuals, but obviously our counterparts from other marginalized communities.
All right, so now that you got to know us a little bit, we do want to get to know who's in the audience. So if we have, by show of hands, any first-time South by Southwest attendees, raise your hand.
Oh my God.
Me too. I feel in solidarity with you, thank you. If we have any chief diversity officers or DEI leads in the room, raise your hand.
Hey.
Hey. Is there anybody here representing an employee resource group? Okay, a couple people. Everybody else, raise your hand if you're not a part of any of those, but you're just here to really deepen your understanding of DEI. Fire.
We need y'all.
You're here to learn. Shout out to my friends and all of our family who are here just to see how awkward we can be in public speaking. Y'all can raise your hands if you want to. But all right, cool. With that, we'll jump into the conversation. So the name of our panel is The Next Generation of DEI Culture. And so with that, you know, over time, we've seen the nature of DEI change in many ways over time. So my question is, what is the responsibility of us and the next generation of DEI practitioners to make sure this work moves forward? Nate.
What is the responsibility of us? You know, when I say us, I mean, I hope you mean all of us in the room. And I feel like that's an important distinction because a lot of us leave it to the ERGs or the DE&I leads or the organizations like 600 and Rising to do the work. And in reality, the work is us. You know, we're the ones, you know, unconsciously microaggressing. We're the ones creating the violence and the toxicity in our four walls of our offices, in our cubicles, and in those Zoom rooms. Some of y'all need to take more stands in Zoom rooms, and that is important that you understand that it's all of our responsibilities that when someone hasn't had a moment to speak in a Zoom room, it's to pause the Zoom call to acknowledge the person and ensure they have had their voice been heard and have had the moment to be seen and felt like they belonged and mattered. That is all our responsibility.
Anybody want to follow up?
I can.
Is it working?
Mic issues, bro.
I'm Mexican, so I can definitely project.
Bennett, do you want to hop in while Ash is getting set up?
I can hop in here. I think it goes a little bit simpler than that. You know, I mean, over the past couple of years, but I guess over my lifetime working in the industry, I've kind of been affiliated with DEI just by being who I am, whether that's being Black or coming up through initiatives that allowed me to take space in this industry. But you know, I grew up in New York City, very diverse. I grew up at the edge of New York City in this place called Far Rockaway. Everybody knows it for the beach and not much else. But like growing up around all these diverse neighborhoods and just like just awesome people, like the simple thing for me is like if you care about the people in your lives, you care about the issues that affect them the most. Mm-hmm. You know, for me entering the industry, I was affected by Superstorm Sandy. That's a climate change issue. That's a whole bunch of issues for marginalized communities and in coastal communities, right? You know, but then meeting people like Nate, meeting people like Ash over my time, like understanding what it means to stand up for the trans and non-binary communities, understanding what it means for other creative professionals who did not have the opportunities I had to like break into the business, but still made their own ways. And it's really that simple. Like it doesn't take 12 steps to just look at the person next to you and say, okay, like we're in this work together, like, what does that mean for you? What does that mean for me? How can we make it great for both of us? That is everybody's responsibility, like whether it was last generation of DEI, this generation or next.
Okay, yes, you can hear me. Hi.
So I think one of the things that struggled, and I think we've seen it in the past couple of years with election, you know, there was a moment in time where we felt like this thing wasn't right, and then we, you know, voted, and then we corrected the thing, and I feel like there's this notion of like, okay, now we're back to normal, we're fine, like we can relax. But this work, like, is longer than that. It takes more time than that. Yeah. And it's a constant push, and you can't get comfortable. You have to actually get uncomfortable in order for change to happen.
Absolutely. Okay, a quick follow-up question, especially for you, Ash, just knowing that you're really working in the space. This work is really hard, and I think we, you know, in our prep conversations, we've talked before. So, you know, we talked about our identity and our lived experience being a means to another company's DEI initiatives. So this work can be very heavy because of that. Can you kind of give the audience just a bit of advice on, like, within the work, how you guys recharge and how you take care of yourselves within the work, but most importantly, how you can set boundaries around the work?
Therapy. A lot of therapy. Honestly, therapy, like, saved my life, and it does it, like, every day. It's helpful. And, you know, beyond that, though, I think with this work, I take it personally because I'm part of the community. And I just, like, I put a lot of pressure on myself to try to change what's been around for more than 400 years. And I think that pressure leads to burnout. It leads to disempowerment. It leads to frustration. And it leads just down a bad hole. And I feel like we have to remind ourselves that, yes, we're one person, we have power, everybody has a power, but it's all about everybody coming together and making it happen. And so I tried to just say, like, do what I can and take it day by day, because it's about progress, not perfection, in this work as well.
Preach. Sorry.
Man, that therapy aspect, I wanted to say it first, but I'm glad you did, because I feel like my answer, quite frankly, is, like, listen to your body. I had to quit the industry. Like, I did that a few years ago because of everything that Ash just said. Like, the disempowerment, the frustration, the feeling like whatever rooms I'm in trying to make change is not good enough, because if anybody's seen the data, the needle hasn't moved on our representation, especially in the executive ranks. Especially in the creative space, where, you know, creative or strategy, which I take up both spaces, and I had to leave. Like, it was heartbreaking for me to leave, because I love the industry, I love the people that, like, helped me along, and, like, if, you know, this is a time of great resignation, right? Like, I hate being the kind of person to encourage people to, like, if you got to leave a job, if you got to leave a space that is not safe for you. Like, it's bigger than representation, it's bigger than retention, we'll talk about it. Like, it's quality of life. Like, we cannot help the communities that we mean to support if we cannot help ourselves. So whatever that requires, whether that is therapy, whether that is, like, moving, whether that is, like, figuring out something that works best for yourself, your sanity, your peace of mind, and the future of the dreams that you want for this world, like, do it. Like, as long as it's healthy, do it.
Right. I like that. It snaps.
I read this crazy stat earlier from Hughes' State of Inequity that Black, Indigenous people of color are 3 times as more to consider the place they're going to work at and consider their emotional well-being, right? 3 times to care and prioritize their emotional well-being because of how toxic they feel their previous environment was or their experiences in corporate America and the trauma that exists there. Right now, imagine not having the means to be able to take care of yourself, right, and then having to still figure out how to take care of yourself and have a quality of life, and potentially be walking into, you know, a place that's going to have a violent interaction. Mild, PG, it's still violence, you know, and it still has a cut to it, and you still may not have the means to support it. And we walk into spaces and places every day, and we center ourselves with our decisions and how we move through corporate America, and how often do we leave other communities, especially historically excluded, out of the decision-making process because you prioritize you so much, because you have that lived experience that can afford you the means for your support. So what they're saying is there's a lot of challenges in systemic racism and systemic oppression in historically excluded communities that don't even enable us to have access to mental well-being or emotional well-being. And it's very unfortunate, and you know, I'm so happy that we're having a conversation about it because we all need to have access to it, even the allies, because this shit is heavy work, right? We're not. This is hard. It's hard giving our trauma to you all. I can't imagine, you know, what it's like to carry it now. It's already hard for us. And y'all just taking little pieces of it, y'all need to understand that your reaction now is very important to our emotional well-being in your spaces now. Like, how you react to our trauma and experiencing it and learning and growing from it, you all need to reflect on how you're reacting and how you're experiencing that now, and like how you may still be centering yourself in your interactions. So please check in with yourself and your body and your mental well-being. Super important.
Yeah, I love that. And I read a stat that said that currently in the DEI industry, over 90% of DEI practitioners or chief diversity officers, chief equity officers, are Black women. And so, like, to your point of, you know, imagine kind of like what that offloading of trauma looks like onto others, but then to also be a part of that community, and it's just kind of like a ping pong effect of like this weird trauma, whether it's in the workplace, but you also have to think about like the several other microaggressions or things that have happened outside of the workplace that compound, and people bring that to work and they walk in those doors or don't join those Zoom calls sort of with that baggage. So it's, mental health is a very important conversation when you think DEI, for sure. So thank y'all for sharing that. So we'll pivot now to the next question. You know, with everything going on in the news today, you know, we opened up our panel just with acknowledgement and one of the many things that are going on in the news. But kind of with everything, you know, going on in the news, what's the expectation of the industry and of your respective companies, whether, you know, you're a part of the company or you own the company, to have a strong viewpoint and stance on really pressing and timely issues? Start with you, Ash.
Yeah, I think people are so quick to put that message out, put that black square, you know, say something, right? Because if they're not saying something, then that means something as well, right? But I urge people who are in charge of those communications to take a beat, because it's honest, that message, it doesn't matter. It's just a message. What really matters is the people that are impacted that work at your company. Check in on them, see what's going on, ask them what they need. They don't need that message. Maybe they just need you to give them a break, give them some space, or donate to an organization. Like, I feel like a message is, at this point now, starting to become empty, and it's about it's about action, and it's about how you can really, you know, help your employees now.
And I unfortunately have to say, like, a lot of this shit has been empty. Like, if you think over even the last few years, like, what have the conversations been? Greenwashing, rainbow washing, obviously in the wake of George Floyd, the black squares, like, you know, it takes organizations like the 15% pledge to say, oh, well, you don't just have to put a black square there. You could say, oh, I could rethink how I structure my damn business about it, right? Like, there are the simple, like, employer to employee conversations, but like, you kind of have to step back and rethink, like, all right, clearly this isn't just, you know, a black man dying. This is not just legislation that is impacting women, trans communities, you know, your chance at livelihood in this freaking country. You know, it's very much like, okay, the system was built by how many old ass white guys who felt they knew better than everybody else?
All of the old ass white guys.
Oh, I don't got time for them. Y'all shouldn't have time for them. Like, y'all are in these rooms as well, like, whether leading ERGs and stuff like that. Like, sure, the executives have something to say, but like, y'all could step in if y'all feel like this is something that matters to you, something that your employees should know about. Whether they get involved or not, that's on them. But if you have a stake, as you know, if you're being paid, you kind of have a stake in this. Like, this is probably one of the few industries without a union, right? Like, it unfortunately takes organizations like the ones that I run or an Allyship in Action to, like, sure, make waves, but, like, we're empowered by you guys. So, like, yeah, I would say, like, it, I don't want to say, like, that emotional labor should be on us who are dealing with so much already, but, like, we're angry already. Like, let's push that, like, energy towards, like, doing really, like, impactful things amongst ourselves, amongst, you know, yeah.
Yeah. And to that point, what is the responsibility, do you think, or what advice do you have to give for the workforce to show up? You know, we talked about how we expect the company to show up and kind of have a stake in the game, but how can the workforce really show up?
Mind if I jump?
Yeah.
So the reality of the situation is capitalism is a reflection of society, right? Like, we were all accepting what was going on for so long. Some of us systemically oppressed into it and suffering through violence, right? And we're just now gaining the access to the emotional well-being to fight back with means. And so society is finally pushing back against capitalism in a way that is like, no, 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 we don't care about your message. We want to know that people matter. So when a Patagonia shuts down on a Black Friday, we all rip and rave and their profits still soar. You know, during the pandemic, companies shut down for weeks and months and they were still thriving, right? And so that means there's access to so much more money that could be invested in our mental well-beings and not in the office spaces and perks that is just being spent and wasted and not supporting us and our emotional well-being because we are just like okay with it. We'll get that beer on tap. You know, we'll go to that happy hour, you know, and get jiggy with all our friends. But who are we leaving out in that, you know? Who are we leaving out in not having the economic means to invest in the well-being of people during these crazy circumstances? And so we have to push back and make our word heard that we want more emotional resources and support, right? Another day off. Or when a war breaks out, some time to rest. Some real time to rest. And so I think we need to be better about speaking up and acknowledging that there's a war. You jump in Slack, there's still a war. Every day in Slack, in your general channel, there is a war right now. I may need a break here or there. I apologize in advance. And if your office can't understand that, I don't know if you should be in that office. So please try to access yourself and see if something doesn't feel dignified and respectful, especially a message. Like, no one cares about a message.
Yeah, I think one of the themes, you know, in the work I'm, you know, 600 is doing is collective action, right? Like, I get it. It is scary to be one of the only Black people, one of the only Latinos, one of the only women in a position of power, you know, when all these things are going on, right? But I will have, like, bond with each other, you know, like, find ways to tell your employers to stop thinking of diversity, equity, inclusion as a business imperative and more of a societal and relationship imperative. Like, they only care about profits and winning awards and showing up at Cannes, looking all fly and shit. Like, my people are dying. My people cannot, like, express themselves in the way that they choose to. That shit is whack. That shit is whack. It's hurting people. It's hurting us. You know, like, just tell your employers, like, sit down with yourself. Sit down with the shit that's going on. Sit down and see, like, the conversations that you're having about your employees from marginalized communities. Like, you may be hyping them up, but they may be coming back to somebody from another agency, somebody from a tech brand, somebody from you know, another space that may end up hiring them, right? We're talking about, like, how many people in the room have heard at least once, this shit is a pipeline problem? Raise your hand. Like, you can't find the talent, you can't find us? We've been here. Like, we've been here. Like, it's so trash to think that, like, it's a pipeline problem when it's much more. It's an infrastructure problem. As I've said, it's a quality of life problem. When you think about it as a business imperative, you're only thinking about the profits. You're thinking about the dollars and cents. But when you think about it as a societal problem, you could think about the sustainability issues in our country, the obvious racial tensions that have been happening, whether it's immigration, whether it's our lives being put out there, like dying for this shit. Like, and then like you rethink the work. That changes the way you think about the work. That changes the way you think about consumers. Nah, they're people just like the people in the room. Like, that's what it goes down to.
I like the point that you made around structural. So the next question is around structure. Given the swift demand for a more diverse and mindful workplace, you know, many companies, whether it was from outside pressure from consumers, their employees, other brands, et cetera, you know, they've really adopted DEI practices, especially over the last 18 plus months. So, you know, sometimes we understand that that's for optics. And, you know, we're kind of curious to understand that they're not necessarily accounting for structural change in that. So can you speak to how that impacts the DEI work? We'll start with Nate.
It's hard for me because I have a boutique shop, so I can't speak of experience being within the four walls of a corporation that does have it. So I just want to put that out there. Disclaimer. But it doesn't help, you know. For the most part, it doesn't help if you're virtue signaling and you're not doing the real work internally and not creating the right opportunities for people to access the support they need to learn more about what it means to be an ally, to learn more about what it means to scale up through, you know, corporate America, and if you're a person of color, if you have different ability challenges. Like, there needs to be more insight in more detail about transparency and accountability in the office. That's how Allyship in Action was founded, was to really hear more about these ideas and infrastructural changes that people were trying to implement in 2020. It was like, all right, cool, let's talk about it. That black hair was cute, that press release was really cute, but let's hear more about the infrastructural shifts and changes you have going on. Let's hear from your ERG teams to hear what their programs are like, so we can reflect that back to the industry, and so we can all knowledge share and learn and grow from those insights about the work that's actually being done. And so we at Allyship in Action to filter and identify the people who are making real change beyond just the virtue signaling of press releases.
Yeah. I'll say my trajectory through the industry has been so weird that I've been a copywriter at a top agency, but I've also been a journalist. I've covered this work, the future of the agencies, the future of media in general, and the amount of stories I got from agencies touting their new diversity initiatives, as somebody who was a literal diversity hire at a top agency in this industry, it's so, the amount of people who really do need to be in this conversation, right? I was the only black journalist. You think Adweek, Ad Age, Digiday, The Drum, I was at The Drum. There was nobody else who had that cultural competency to really understand. And I actually got a lot of empathy for those people who are in this space, because they're inundated with press releases all the time. They don't have the chance to be more investigative about what's really going on in the industry. And that's an opportunity for us to speak up. There's quite a few more black and brown people who are covering the industry as a whole, right? And when I started, the optics around things like diversity were either awarding us for just showing up in the room and just being fucking great, like we usually are, or the fact that, oh my gosh, there's such amazing talent out there that we can hire, and you know, that's great. Let's just shovel them up at a career fair, and then wait till they hit mid-senior level, leave for another place, and let that not be a story that's talked about while the guys who are winning all the awards get promoted, chief creative officer, ECD, taking on a brand that probably caters to communities of color better than they do their white peers, but probably has no staffing under them that really understands it. So that's hurt, the optics of it all, it validates those people who are in power, who think that they're doing such a great fucking job, they're really not, and allows us to suffer even further and even more.
So diversity professionals are not fairy godparents. I'm gonna say this again. Diversity professionals are not fairy godparents. And I say that because leaders are hiring heads of D&I to fix a larger problem with no resources and no support. And that is extremely frustrating, especially for somebody who's been in this field for 5 years and has been in different organizations and media companies. And, you know, I've gathered along the way, though, what I really need in my next organization. I think a workable budget is what's needed for a D&I lead. Resources, when we talk about resources, I'm talking about people who do not just do this as an extracurricular, right? Like, it's people who are 50%, 100%, like, reporting into you, that kind of thing. And then finally, it's support from leadership and backing. I say that because there are moments where I've brought up experiences from my BIPOC employees, and I've said, hey, these are the this is what I'm hearing from our employees. Like, this is the issue. Here's what I suggest. And it's been met with a lot of white fragility. It's been met with a lot of defensiveness where they flip it on me and they're like, well, you're attacking me. What's going on? Like, and it's like, it's not about you. it's about the employees. And I need you to put your bias, your fragility aside and work with me, collaborate with me to find a solution together, because this is a collaboration, this is a partnership. Again, it's not all on me. It's not on your BIPOC employees. It's not on the ERG leads. It's everybody. And I know that's been said before, but we're gonna bring it home today, so. Yeah.
I want to piggyback off of this because of the work you do, Ash, and because I know when, like, I was a junior employee, my expectation and knowledge of, like, the people who are running diversity things is so much different than now. Like, I kind of thought my diversity leads at my agency were the fairy godparents, right? Like, I was doing the work, and I thought they would, like, help, like, facilitate it, make it a little bit easier for me. And as a lot of us realize once we move up in the world, their hands are tied. Their hands are, like, so far tied, like, a lot of times, especially in the larger organizations, that, you know, like, as much as they want to help, they don't have the access to the chief creative officers, they don't have the access to the chief strategy officers. A lot of them, and I'm glad that that trend is shifting now, where they're reporting more to HR, to, like, reporting under a chief executive officer, or somebody with, like, a business line that doesn't have to do with, like, attraction, retention. You know, like, it's like, how do we make each part of the business better? You know, yeah. And it, like, a fairy godmother will not make it work. You still have to put on not a glass slipper, but real fucking shoes and Tim's, take those steps out there, mm-hmm. and, like, do the work alongside them. Mm-hmm. Like, they're your partner, not the person you throw out at the diversity fair, the career fair, to hype an agency that, like, is probably shitty behind the closed walls. And, like, you know, they probably know that, and they're trying to, like, do the best that they can, but y'all gotta show up. CEO's gotta show up. C-suite's gotta show up. Executives gotta show up. Directors gotta show up. Like, tell your white friends, show up with you.
Absolutely. from my perspective, you know, as a director in DEI, I was the only one at my company for almost close to 2 years. And we finally got to a point where we were able to hire a chief in the role. And I was naive enough to think, like, okay, this is going to be a fairy godmother. Like, this person's going to come in, they're going to be able to build a strategy, they're going to steer the ship. And I hadn't quite thought about all of the, I guess, support that was needed from a senior level, a CEO level, to really help not only build that infrastructure, but just to provide resources to back the work. So the culture, I love the point you make.
Right?
And the culture.
Like, we are all just a reflection of all the people that we work around at work all day. So if the CEO is being toxic, better be damn sure the C-suite is being toxic. And from there, who knows what that place looks like?
I mean, there's this thing called the glass cliff assignment. And it can be used across, you know, various mediums, but it's being really used now when it comes to chief diversity officer work. And a glass cliff assignment is essentially where it's like this person is kind of like put into a sinking ship, or, you know, they're put in a position where they don't necessarily have the structure built within the actual company to succeed in the role. And that's why you see such high turnover at that level. Yeah. Okay, so somewhat of a controversial thought, but attaching purpose-driven or mission-oriented work to something can make it ripe land for exploitation. Companies offer, they often look at hiring young and hungry or at least very passionate people within DEI roles or to lead ERGs, et cetera. But when you look at the top, sometimes, that mission that is being distributed and garnering passion throughout the company doesn't necessarily reflect at the top. So can we speak to sort of like what are your thoughts on how leadership should set the tone from top down?
I think about Bob Chapek. Obviously, I mean, Texas is not the only state in this country with discriminatory legislation towards women, towards the trans community, and Disney caught a lot of heat. This guy goes up publicly and said, I fucked up, I failed. You know how many CEOs I wish could have said, like, in these 2.5 years almost, that, like, they have fucked up, they have failed, they suck at this work? You know, I think that is probably my first thing for them to do. Like, just own up to it. It's okay. We all suck at it. We all are learning. But, like, the longer it takes for you to, like, own up to that and, like, how this impacts your personal life, you know, the longer it will take to reflect in how, like, you work and become a servant to your employees. Because I think, you know, when you're up, you know, in the C-suite, white ivory towers, you think, like, people are reporting to you, but, like, you're also responsible to them. Like, this is a service industry. Advertising is a service. We're not just serving consumers, we're serving people. The people we present this work to, but also the people like that are there trusting us to lead. And so for so long, it's just been like ego-driven. And when you have somebody leading easily one of the most important companies globally, being able to like admit that and say like, I want to do better. Like, I'm willing to show up more and figure out better ways to, you know, just make sure that your values, your voices in these important issues matter, the better all of us are going to be for it.
I can add on just a little bit, but these leaders that are in these positions, they're predominantly cis, white, heterosexual men. And I think, you know, again, white fragility comes into play, and I really want leaders to do a lot of personal work with their own biases and, like, really ask some questions and do some research and, you know, don't rely just on your D&I person to have all the answers. Like, do your own research. Like, you got Google, right? But I think, you know, outside of that, too, I would also just, like, have leaders just be more empathetic and open to employees. Like, if you have office hours, like, establish that, you know, like, just say anybody in the company can come, put 15 minutes on, like, let's have a conversation and make yourself available.
Absolutely. We'll go right back to you, Ash, with this question. So we know no matter what, companies have to meet a bottom line. And because of that mentality, at times, DEI work can be seen as extracurricular. So can you talk to kind of like how that impacts the DEI work when you're obviously hoping for buy-in, not only from top down, but hoping to see DEI infused in the work that you do throughout all mediums. How does it impact the work when it's deemed as extracurricular, when this is your full-time job?
And we have to rethink that, because it's not an extracurricular, honestly. It's part of the bottom line, honestly. It's part of your culture. It's part of your people. It's going to impact in more areas than you can ever imagine. And if, like, it doesn't line up, you're going to have a retainment issue ultimately. And that's going to impact you in a lot of ways. But outside of the diversity work itself, or with the diversity work itself, like, I mean, it's just not going to get done. Like, if... Again, it's not just on my team. It's everybody. And what we've been doing, at least at my agency, is like, especially with creatives and trying to come up with ideas to launch as diversity initiatives, we're actually embedding it in their time. So like we work with our resourcing manager and say, hey, like, can we give like our creatives about 10% of this week to help out with diversity initiatives? And I think when you can be proactive and get ahead of that and start embedding it into your processes, it removes that extracurricular notion. And then it also, again, helps people think that, oh, this is not just like a thing that we do like on top of our day job. This is part of our job.
Yeah, and can I add, like, embedding it into the infrastructure and systems is like so priority and so important. I know something that we've implemented at Pilot Group recently from one of Jason Rosario at our Allyship in Action conference. He said something to do on the production side. It was pretty beautiful. Anyone work in production? Cool. So we do, at Pilot Group, we started doing this thing called a call sheet intake, which asks a mirage of questions for anyone who's going to be on set. Your pronouns, your dietary restrictions, like anything you need to be happier on set, like anything, like the music, the snacks, like all of that. And we share it with everyone in the crew so everyone knows how to be compassionate to the other people, right? We're embedding this idea of consideration and compassion into the infrastructure, into the systems of, you know, how we produce and how we operate. And it's something so simple and so small that you implement, and now everyone has access to a deeper, more meaningful and compassionate connection on set. And it's like a family every time we're on set. It's crazy. It's beautiful.
Great. Okay, so trust and fragility. Trust is very fragile in the community right now. We're specifically talking to marginalized communities, BIPOC, just because many people over everything that's happened over centuries, but, you know, thinking to the last 18 months, you know, a lot of these people are still grieving. They're very frustrated. They're looking for more allyship within their companies and from their leadership, and looking for accomplices, really, in the space. So what are your thoughts on asking staff to volunteer? And just to reference some other things that we've talked about in the conversation already, we're saying it's everybody's work, right? It's not just up to your diversity offices to handle this issue. It's for everyone. But even when we're looking to see how the workforce is showing up in holding companies accountable, we're still seeing that a lot of those staff volunteers are people of color or people who are part of marginalized groups. So do you guys have kind of like any advice for organizations who are also seeing that, and how to get more accomplices and allies involved who are a part of non-marginalized groups, or to say it plainly, white people involved? Just so that BIPOC aren't being the ones that are the majority volunteers or being voluntold into the work.
Ash, I feel like Ash and I were talking about this earlier, and I loved hearing about your ERGs.
Yeah, I can speak on that, actually. So at our, we have 6 ERGs that we recently launched, and in that structure, we said, okay, we want to have an executive sponsor to help guide the ERG and influence from a business or from a decision-making power. And then we have 2 co-leads who are people who are, we have identified as rising talent. Essentially, what we've done is, it was kind of like a voluntold situation, but at the same time, I was like, no, like, it's not, I'm not gonna let you just do this work without getting some type of compensation. And part of that, yes, is financial. We have dedicated budget to pay them at the end of the year for their work, because they're giving at least like 50 hours plus, like, to be doing these types of things and to be not compensated. Like, what, it's showing the value, honestly, from the company's point of view. So pay your employees. If you got a little extra budget, like $2,500, like, is nothing per employee. That's what we're doing. Yeah.
Want to add anything, Bennett?
I mean, the most I'll say is, I mean, the organizations are out there, and I think for a lot of white people in this industry, and I had a conversation with an agency founder not too long ago, like, just, you know, feeling stressed out about this whole diversity situation and asking me, can this work be joyful? I don't think it's been joyful for me at any point in my career. I'm sure it hasn't been for anybody on this panel, maybe. Maybe some of y'all have felt joy doing diversity work. But like, in order to do this sort of thing, like, you know, I think when you're higher up, you're thinking, oh, how can we do this on a national level? Like, do we have enough budget to support like this grassroots organization that's helping young black men and women like break in, maybe not, right? Like sometimes it doesn't need money. Like sometimes it just needs manpower. You know, like it's great to be in a city where there are literally two advertising high schools out there. Like it could start as simply as like, all right, let me show up at a high school. Doesn't need to be an advertising high school. Maybe it could be an art high school. You know how many kids from marginalized communities think like, I want to be a singer, writer, painter, something in the creative industries, but get told by their parents, you're not going to make money out of it. That's what my parents told me. But if somebody showed up from an ad agency and said, oh, wow, you're a great writer. Have you considered this industry? Did you know that Bounty does not make its own slogans? It takes somebody like your bright self to like show up in the room and do that. That changes minds and perspectives. And I think that like, if budget is a thing, if y'all can't fund us to, you know, to make this work easier and more joyful, like you can make a community service for yourself. You can show up in the hood, show up in the streets, show up where we are. Like see like how the problems you feel like are happening in your agency can, as dear friend Kat Gordon or Cindy Gallup would say, like a micro action. Just one thing. Like, see how you feel after that. If you feel good, do it again. Bring more friends. I love a buddy system. Who doesn't? Like, that's what it's gonna take.
Yeah, and this becomes frustrating, really frustrating at the root of it, because if more allies and white people befriended more people outside of their circles and communities, if you got to know more black women, if you got to know more trans humans, you'd understand the challenge of showing up in Texas as a challenge. In showing up in Texas, you wouldn't just happily dapply just show up here and realize, you know, you're helping the state build more laws against people who are suffering, communities that are suffering here. And if you had a friend, when the first thing popped up around people striking against South by Southwest, I wasn't aware either. And it immediately was just like, whoa, very discomforting. I'm about to go talk about DE&I in a state where they're funding the lack of rights to trans communities and just taking away abortion rights from women. I'm about to go talk about DE&I culture there. The first thing I did was call my new homie.
Hi.
But get this, Ash isn't my only homie, you know? I have other homies that I mentor in the trans community that I don't speak about. They're just someone that I talk to and engage and I support. You know, I don't need to come out and say it out loud, but how many of your friends are trans? Handful. How many of your friends are black women? You know, like, we all need to just, like, have access to more people.
Can I piggyback on that? Yo. In Instagram or in real life?
Yeah.
Don't cap. Do not front on this.
Facts. But, like, actually know people, because if you did, you'd have more compassion and figure out how to support and have micro actions in their communities, because you'd have access to them. You wouldn't feel like an outsider. You'd feel comfortable around people who are different from you if you had more friends from different communities. Sorry for the tone shift, but I got it.
It's cool, and, like, they don't have to be loud. They don't have to be loud. Like, I am wearing a shirt from my friend Van, who went through top surgery not too long ago as part of a fundraiser. He was like, he's a designer, he's part of, they're a designer, they're part. See, I'm doing the work. It's hard, like I said, this shit is hard,
it's
bro.
Okay.
This shit is hard. I'm just a straight black man trying to like help people in this world, man. But, you know, Band did a fundraiser to help with their surgery, and it wasn't just like some GoFundMe. They made shirts for the Top Service Moving Company, which is a great initiative that honestly like should come back and should help more people within the trans community like just feel safe, know that people are supporting them in their journeys to become their best selves and to like live in safety, because like, you know, we may understand safety in a perspective as straight cisgender black men, but seeing trans men and women and non-binary people suffer, that shit is so whack. It is so whack. And like, you know, we gotta be in this shit together. Like, it can be quiet, it can be loud, but it has to be something.
Absolutely. There's value in gaining perspective from the people around you. Okay, so we'll go to the final question, which is, I want everybody individually to answer, what is one thing that you'd like the audience to take away from you?
Man, the change we want can't work if we cannot change the literal work itself. Like, we have to change the way we think about this work. We have to look at the narrative that has been put on DEI just through its life cycle, as long as we've been talking about this work. And it's not just advertising, it is literal civil rights, it is politics, it is public health, it is everything. You know, but when it does come to the creative work, right, like, are we doing these for good, feel good opportunities for a Cannes Lion, or because there are communities of color who could really, really use a brand just like understanding them by uplifting a voice and saying, we fucking see you, by looking at your vendors and partners as not just like add-ons, you know, that may like, you know, fix a cultural competency that your agency doesn't have, but as people that can add value, like just general like value to the way you think, the way you treat the people who are in-house, and the way you can show up as a leader around other leaders, because I know y'all leaders talk. Like, y'all leaders are just like real chummy, but like, do y'all really challenge yourselves outside of, I want to win more business than you? You know, nah, that's not what this shit is about. Like, business goes from one agency to another every day. That shit's regular. Like, the people who impact the business, they're not regular. They're fucking extraordinary. And you should treat them as extraordinary. Pay them more. Value them more. Like, understand that their impact in the work is not just like for a value fit. Everybody adds value to an organization if you really see them for who they are. And that's where that change comes in.
Man, I just see, I see all of us in this room, and I just see a responsibility in each of you, even the ones walking out right now.
Love you, Juliet.
Thanks, Juliet. To do something to decenter ourselves every single day. If you just wake up with the single thought of decentering yourself and supporting someone that may not have thought that you'd have supported them in that capacity or imagined, just like give someone something unexpected and how you support them every single day. Every single day. Imagine if a CEO did that every single day, how much life-changing impact they could create versus what can I gain? What can I gain? What can I take? What can I get? How can you support every single day in decentering yourself? And I think if we all walked away as individuals today, we'd understand what work we need to do as an individual, how we can feel nourished in the work, and how we can honor the work and honor the communities and the people we want to support in the work. Because if it comes from a space of capitalism and gain and wanting more and more and more, like winning the Cannes Awards, getting into a new business, then it isn't gonna be safe for any of us. And so if you focus on decentering yourself and supporting someone, I know it sounds so simple and so like passe and like cliche, but how much do you center yourselves on your Zoom calls, on your phone call with your mother, you know, like every single day, just asking someone what they need, very simply, and prioritizing them. You could change so many people's lives every single day.
Everybody in this room has power. Everybody has a choice to make. Personally, for me, I almost didn't come to South by Southwest. Yes, because of the legislation that is happening here, but more importantly, I do not feel safe as a trans person in Texas. And I'm from here. But you know what? I had a choice to make. And I decided to come. I decided to come because I have a platform, I have a stage here to say what I want to say. And that is, trans people are people. We are here. We've always been here. We will continue to be here. And what's happening today is just horrible, because the erasure, the block to access that is for healthcare is a right that everybody should have access to. And it harms my community the most, because it impacts our representation and how we view ourselves in society. It impacts us mentally, because there is a government, there's an entity that says, this is not normal, you're not normal, you can't do this, and that fucks me up. But we're gonna be okay, we're gonna keep fighting, and everybody in this room, y'all know there's an election coming this year, and you have a choice.
That's beautiful. So we sit before you as four different individuals with intersecting identities, of course, multiple intersecting identities. And we hope that our passion for DEI and this work and how it moves forward really showed through in this conversation. But unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. I want to thank the three of you for your vulnerability and your candor in this conversation, and for coming and for showing up in your truth and in your power and using this platform. And I want to thank all of you guys for coming and opening yourself up to learning and hearing from these incredible panelists.
Appreciate y'all.